T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Just past midnight in St. Louis, talked about tipping. Everyone has a different definition of what a good tip is. We're not talking about, you know, keep your hand out of the garbage disposal. That's a great tip, but we're talking about the money that you would give out. In fact, Bill from St. Louis here has been holding the line, who had some questions. So, hey, Bill, thanks for holding on.
Yeah, this is a question about tipping. Well, let's say if I go to the barbershop or go for a ride in a taxi or go to a restaurant, how much percentage should you leave about on tipping?
That's a good question. All right, so I wanted to bring in Mike Anderson because he works in a restaurant. So 20% is kind of standard anymore, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, at a restaurant, I would say 20%.
Okay, barbershop is where we argued here off air. Because and then the cab.
Amiably argued.
Yeah, so let's go to cab first. How much do you give it to a cab driver?
Well, as I was saying before, I feel like cabs are so expensive that I'm hard-pressed to tip much on a cab driver.
Do you
I didn't know
Uber?
You had to tip too much for a cab.
Do you do Uber or Lyft or anything like that?
No, I deleted the Uber app after you told me how much it spies on
you.
Yeah,
it knows every move you do. But if you, on the app, apparently you can tip on there, so it makes it easier for you to tip. But if you're paying cash or something like that in an actual taxi, I guess people tip, but I've never taken I've taken a taxi once, but I don't remember tipping or anything. I just have no idea.
Yeah, I probably don't tip well enough on a taxi.
Barbershop. So this is where we all have a question. In fact, you're training the new guy, and he dropped the bomb. Hey, pull that mic around real quick. Oh, you don't have the headphones. All right. So he dropped the bomb, and he said when he goes to a barbershop, he tips $10.
New guy tips $10.
$10 at a barbershop. That seems crazy to me. Is it really? That's the standard?
Well, like I said, if it's a good cut, I usually give them at least $8 to $10 if it's a good cut, and $5 if it's a bad one. But I cut my own hair now, though, so it's not even an issue.
All right, so Bill on the line, how much do you normally tip a barber?
Well, when I go to the barber, he charges $8, and I give him like $2 for a tip. So it's $10 in all.
Wow, I want to go where you go. $8, that's great for a haircut. That's where I want to go. Uh-huh. Where do you go to get your haircut?
I'm usually down in Michigan in Holly Hills there.
Okay.
And he charges $8, but I give him $10.
I think that's fine. Like
when I give him $10, I just tell him to keep the change.
You feel real high roller too, right?
Yeah. Well, now let's say if I go and have a beer at a tavern, how much should I leave per bottle?
Normally when I don't drink, but normally I think it's $1 per drink. Is that normally standard?
I would say standard per beer is $1. Yeah.
I usually leave I usually drink two sometimes when I'm at a bar, and I just leave $1 tip.
Are you really doing $1 worth of work going to grab something out of a cooler, though? Is it just more the principle of it all?
Depends on how busy you are. I mean, every time that you spend on one customer is taking time away from another customer.
You could essentially be making $500 an hour. I got to imagine that's how many drinks you can grab in one hour.
Yes, you are working. I mean,
yeah.
Are you really physically laboring right now? You get paid pretty well for this.
Why am I not getting tipped for doing this show?
I tip you.
You do. You bring me all kinds of tips, which is watch your bald spot. You put me up on camera.
Watch your hot dogs.
Watch your hot dogs. Hey, Bill, thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I want to go get my haircut where he gets his haircut. You can do I'm so simple. When I go in to get a haircut, I go to Great Clips because I'm too lazy to cut my hair anymore. I used to cut my hair, and it's kind of a hassle because you got to sweep it all up and you get little hair fragments everywhere. But it saves you time and money doing it that way. I need to start doing that again. But I'm like you. I do a number two all the way around. You do a two blade all the way around?
Yeah, two or a three.
So if I were to come into your house and shave your head for you, would you give me a $10 tip like the new guy?
No, because I can do my own for free now. So
yeah, you get pretty good at that.
It's not bad.
When shaving your head, what the clippers, I've had these same clippers forever. You got to get a good pair. And once you do, you can do it all the time. How often are you shaving your head?
I splurged for a pair of Norelco clippers. I think they were like $25. Actually, I got them as a birthday gift. I specifically picked them out and told mom the ones I wanted. They were around $25. And
you probably do the same thing.
I think
it was
3 or 4 years ago. Saved a ton of money.
Let me guess. You do the same thing I do. So you go into the bathroom. Any rugs you take out, you basically strip down. And then you just do all the hair as you're bent over and hoping it all hits the ground. You already have the broom ready to brush it all up. And you clean up. And then when you're done, you just hop in the shower, get it nice and wet, make sure you don't have any of the little pieces left, and you're done.
Yeah. The only other thing I'll do sometimes, I'll clear off the whole countertop of the sink. And sometimes I'll even lay like a couple sheets of paper towels over the sink so that rather than having to clean off the top of the sink,
that's
it already just
hair.
Falls onto the paper towel. Then you can just...
That's a lot of hair, isn't it? For paper towel, how do you get it all contained in the paper towel? You have to be a wizard to get it all
in
one area.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I have like 4 paper towels still connected across the whole sink.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
It just catches them. They like wilts down into the bowl of the sink, but the paper towels hold, and it holds your hair.
Okay.
It's like a little nest of hair.
Dane's calling in. Hey, Dane.
How you doing, Brian?
Good.
Hey, listen, I was telling your screener, now usually I do 20%, but is 15% being cheap or not?
How much are you spending when you sit down at a restaurant? So let's just kind of like judge it based on that. So are you
usually about $25 to $30.
Okay. Are you going alone or are you eating with someone else?
That's usually just for two people.
Okay. So you and a guest paying about let's say $30 on the high end. So basically that would be normally a $6 tip. So what would 15% be? That would be
$4.50.
On $30. Okay. You know, I don't know. I guess maybe you can get away with $5 on $30.
I usually try to carry cash because I really don't like to do it on the card because it takes when they process the credit card, they process the total first and then they process the tip.
Mike Anderson, is that true? Is that the urban legend? The way it's processed? Do you get more money getting cash as opposed to them putting them on a card? Does it matter?
Not that I'm aware of.
You get paid out the
same
way?
Maybe it's over my head and I don't even know. But no, I think it's all just in one fund.
It's wrong because when I check my credit card statement, it says one amount.
All
and
right.
Then it goes to the tip.
I got to say, I don't think 15% is the worst thing ever. I feel like if you do 15 but round up, so you're leaving an even number. So, like, let's say instead of 450, you give a 5 as opposed to a 6. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I really don't.
I didn't think I was being cheap, but I just wanted to get his opinion on that.
I don't think you can leave feeling guilty, like you're trying to slip out not paying the bill. Don't leave feeling guilty with something like that.
Well, you have a good night, Ryan, and I appreciate your show.
Very good, Dane. Hey, good to hear from you. That's good. We have two people waiting to get on here. So they want to talk about tipping, I guess. So, Mike, you are someone in the service industry, so you know this. It's good to get your expertise on it. Some other things that they found out in this survey when it comes to a barber, there was some who don't tip. Let's see. When getting a haircut, 67% of people always tip. In a coffee shop, 29% always tip. Staying in a hotel, 27 people tip at a hotel. Who in their right mind tips at a hotel? No one tip. I never once walked into a hotel and said, I need to tip the person I just got my room from. Who does that? Hotels are expensive enough. Here, $120 to change your sheets because that's all they're cleaning in those rooms. I know it. $120 to sleep in her bed and change her sheets. I hope you enjoy the Arctic blast that you get. One more call. Giovanni, what's going on?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I want to talk about how they make you give a gratuity when you bring a party at a 5 or more, whatever the case may be. I get offended about that because most of the time I will give you more if you just let me be me, depending on your service. But when you make me pay something, that's an issue for me.
When they automatically write it on. You ever notice, too, like they put the suggestions on the bottom of the bills anymore? They say, here's the suggested tip, and they like, and half the time the calculations are wrong. They're just hoping you can't do math. Yeah, the forced tip I've watched restaurants go into the mode of forcing tips and then, like, they just automatically apply, but then they tell you don't give a tip because it's already included. And for whatever reason, that seems to make the servers more money if you do it that way, if you just automatically include it and just encourage.
Right, but suppose you don't have the $26. I'm just hypothetically speaking. Suppose you don't have that.
What, you don't have the money for a large group tip? They would tell you to either don't spend as much or don't go. But no,
the other thing, I won't mention the restaurant, but it's out on Halls Ferry, that they bring your bill from your credit card and then have your credit card balance on it. I'm offended.
What? No yes, way. Sir. I've never seen
yes,
that.
Sir.
That is crazy.
I'm telling you.
What?
I've been to two restaurants, and this is on Lindbergh and Halls Ferry. I won't mention the name because you probably don't want me to.
That is a huge violation.
I kid you not.
There is no chance I would go to that. Are you paying with a debit card? Because of credit, how would they know?
Well, if it's my debit, any kind of card, you should know what my balance is. My balance
what?
Should not be printed on your bill.
That is insane that they could run that. I want to know if that's true.
It.
That's a major news story, then, if that's true.
They do. If you take me off the air, I'll tell you the story.
All right, hold on.
I'll tell you the restaurant.
Hold on. Giovanni, hold on. I'm putting you on hold. Mike, I want you to talk to him off air and figure out what is going on there.
You got
okay?
it. And I will say, to back him up from a service perspective, as far as the automatic gratuity, I've always felt that was kind of a violation of the customer's rights, too. So in my entire time serving, 4 or 5 years now, I've never thrown an automatic gratuity on, but I work with coworkers who gladly do and think that it helps them at certain times if they can tell in their perspective that the person paying isn't going to tip.
Have you ever?
But I've never done it.
Have you ever received one of those things that look like it's a fake dollar bill or whatever, a fake 20, and it's like a message on the back? You ever seen one of those?
I've seen them. I've never gotten them at work.
Yeah, I've seen them online, but I don't know if those actually exist or how rampant those things are. Or people leave you a card and they say, here's the knowledge of my religion as opposed to a tip, and this is worth more. You've seen those? Or online, people post pictures. Servers, I see all the time posting pictures about that.
I had a buddy with an entrepreneurship program, actually a website, that his business cards looked like folded up $100 bills.
Uh-huh. All right, Giovanni, hold on. Mike's going to pull your phone call up. I want to do a little investigation coming up. Also, in Seattle, they're recommending that you eat the rich. Pretty crazy, right? KMOX.
Broadcasting from the KMOX Golden Oak Lending Studios. Golden Oak Lending, with fixed rates now in the twos.
Wake up, kid. It's 1:30. The youth ain't nothing really changing but the date. Are you a grand slammer, but you know Babe Ruth? You gotta learn how to relate. I've been swinging from the pearly gate. I got all the answers, and lo and behold, you got the right key, baby, but the wrong key hole. The rich, there's only one thing.
All right, so that's the Aerosmith, of course. What a great little rant in front of that. So in Seattle, apparently the idea is to eat the rich. I just see this as the ultimate solution to help with the too many rich people in Seattle. So many rich people, let's just eat them. So if you were to hop online right now and look at Seattle, Washington, the Senate there approved a rich-only income tax. I want to know what your thoughts are on eating the rich. All right, so a vote by 9-0. What didn't even have a chance. No one dissenting on this. A vote 9-0. The council approved an income tax that applies only to wealthy people, meaning your income's above $250,000 a year for individuals, $500,000 for married couples. 2.25% tax is a huge tax. You up someone 2.5% almost. And according to the Seattle Times, the city estimates the tax will raise about $140 million a year. They feel like Seattle is about 20,000 or so wealthy enough people that are going to be affected by this tax. That's a lot of people. Let me also tell you this. The people that also are the ones that you're getting all this money from, do you think that what they're going to do is just take the tax and say, you know what, I'm still going to take this money that I'm losing. You know, I'm not going to make it up in any other way. I don't know who has all the money in Seattle, but normally when you're looking at $250,000 to $500,000 a year and you're living in these large metropolitan areas, I got to imagine you also impact other people, as in the means of jobs, in the means of having a business, in the means of how you're giving back to the community. I don't know, but normally when you get up to a certain point, you can earmark a certain X amount of dollars for charitable giving or maybe different causes that mean a lot to you. Now, if you're just going to be taxed by the city and they're going to take that money away, I got to imagine your giving may go down. I got to imagine the amount of money you're going to spend to put back into your business will go down, or maybe they'll find ways to make up for it in the sense that, hey, I don't have this extra money I was going to do to reinvest into my business. I guess it's not important I do. That's going to have what I think is a long-term negative effect on the city. So $140 million a year. And is that just really the answer? We'll just say, you know, I love socialism so much. We're just going to take the richest people in our area and we're going to find ways to disproportionately make them pay even more money. Opponents vowed to fight the measure. The Washington State Republican Chair Susan Hutchinson urged citizens to forcefully resist the tax and not pay a penny. How crazy. If you, I know you're making a lot of money. I don't know if I'll ever make, like, let's say I'm married. I have an idea that I'll never make over $500,000 a year. That seems like just really unrealistic to me. But if I was someone making that much money, 2.5%, it's not like me saying, oh, I got so much money. That's nothing. It's not like that. It's going to take away from something that I rely on, or it's going to take on something, take away from something I earned. And it's going to feel like the city directly stole from me, because that what they're doing is they're like singling out a certain group of people and they're stealing from them. And I say this as someone, I don't think I'll ever be in that bracket. I don't think I'll ever be someone that will make that much money. But still, I can absolutely look at what they're doing and identify that they shouldn't be doing it. The protesters are holding up signs. Here they are. They got a whole group of signs here. Tax the rich. $15 an hour, check. Tax the rich, check. Next thing that's on the list for them, rent control. Rent control, like New York City, I guess. Housing is out of control in a lot of these West Coast areas. California, you want to talk about housing in California, how crazy nuts it is out there right now. There's a lot of other factors that the government could use to alleviate the housing crisis. Number one, you can only fit so many people in such a small metropolitan area. You see it here in St. Louis, too. You want to live closer to downtown where more people and there's more demand? Well, it costs more. That's why it works that way. You want to live in some of these richer areas that has more amenities, better schools? Well, it costs more because there's more demand. It makes sense for you to say, we're just going to use it like socialism. So if so-and-so wants to live in a certain area, forget demand. You know, demand's not important. We need to be able to subsidize people to do whatever they want. Ultimately, that takes away from the area they want to move into. Or when the government has the rent control idea in downtown Seattle, it helps people to have affordable living. But if you can't afford something, the traditional way to think about it is you don't go to places you can't afford. You find the places you can, and the market will work itself out. There's if there's a demand or whatever the cost is. If you can't live downtown, you don't. You live outside of it and you commute in. You do and you live under your means. Or you find a place that's small and then you live within your means. If you can't rent, like for me, looking for homes in the area, you know, if I can't afford a 500,000 square feet home, that's a little large, a 5,000 square foot home or something like that. If I can't afford that, I don't look to the government and say, I need you to subsidize it because that's what I want. The $15 an hour minimum wage in Seattle, it costs more money to live in these large metropolitan areas, so I fully understand why they want to make more money. But at the same time, at the exact same time, what we're finding is the companies are not reacting well to this. And we're finding that they're cutting positions or cutting hours to react. And it's having a negative effect on the businesses of the people that rely on that type of money in those jobs. It's having a very predictable outcome based on how economists said exactly what would happen. So I'm sure we'll get more long-term studies, and I'm sure they'll be ignored. And I'm sure the solution is take the people that have the most money and just tax them until they're not rich anymore, because that's what would be fair. Let's just take the money from the rich and let's just spread it all out. Let's just make socialism the norm. And I can tell you right now, socialism doesn't work. If you're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing towards that, I want you to tell me how it's working in Venezuela right now. as it's over 100 days of protest in the streets, as they are pushing away from socialism, as they don't want it there. Their people are fighting against it, but we here are becoming so complacent that we want to move towards it. 100 days in a row, they've been in the streets. Protesters have been killed by the government protesting. They have found themselves hungry and broke, and the government wants to take away elections because they say, hey, we'll take care of you. Don't worry about elections. We can't, we got to look and learn lessons from places like Venezuela. And when we look at these protesters out there that say, the answer is, give me what I want, and that's the, let's forget what economists say, just give me what I want. It's the wrong way to go about it. How about, let me ask this, we talked about tipping, the social norms. What happens when you see a dog in a hot car? This happens all the time. You're in a grocery store, you're in some place, and you see a dog in a car, and you think, what should I do? Should I try to, do I break the window to get the dog out? It's super hot. Well, KMOV followed the Humane Society rescuing a dog, and then the owner came and confronted them. It's a really good piece I want to play for you coming up. And there's an actress by the name of Lena Dunham, one of the grossest people in America. I mean, to me, she's disgusting for a lot of different reasons. She is going through something, too, with a dog. In fact, I don't know how someone with a heart can adopt a dog for 4 years and decide, I'm going to take it back. Where can I return my adopted dog? That's her story coming up, too. It's KMOX.
Welcome to St. Louis. Welcome to KMOX.
And welcome back to Overnight America. If you have ever broke the glass of a car to free a dog on a hot day, I want you to give me a call. I want to know what happened. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Because that's what happened here. No, well, they didn't break the window. I watched the report from KMOV. It was a really good report. KMOV was following along, and there was a car apparently by the zoo where the Humane Society was called, their Animal Cruelty Task Force, to rescue a dog. It's been so hot. I mean, like, really hot. And when you lock a dog in a car, I mean, the temperatures get up. I think in this report, they even said 130 degrees. You know, dogs die. You know, people forget. You know, it's worse when you lock a kid in there and forget about them. And there were stories where kids still have strokes in cars because the parents forget the kids back there or something terrible. Just really terrible, terrible things. So it's not to that extent, but to lock a dog and leave them while you hop into the grocery store or into the mall or something in a hot car and think they'll be fine because you crack the window, it still gets incredibly hot in those cars. So that's what happened. KMOV heard a story from the Humane Society. They followed them out, and it just so happened the owner got there too. How do you think this got resolved? Let's take a listen.
Someone saw the Chihuahua panting in a Ford Explorer parked outside the St. Louis Zoo and called the Humane Society. The windows were cracked, but the SUV was sitting in the sun. Along with the assistance from zoo security, the Humane Society opened the car and took the dog to be checked out.
Okay, so they opened the car door. It looked like it was unlocked. Or maybe they, what do they call it, the Slim Jim? They got in there and tried to unlock it. Maybe that could have been something that fixed it. But either way, they got the dog out of the vehicle. And as you can imagine, the owner wasn't happy.
They left a notification. We were there.
Oh, the notification is interesting. It looks like not necessarily like a parking ticket. You ever see those little pieces of paper you put over a door handle, like do not disturb? It kind of looked like one of those, almost like, hey, we need to remind you to pay your mailman, or not your mailman, but to pay your local newspaper boy. Like they put those little reminders in your doors or your door handles. That's kind of what it looked like. It was just a little sheet of paper, and then they wrote down, we took your dog, okay?
We were there when the woman came out asking where her dog went. The Humane Society came by and took your dog.
Get the camera off right now. I mean it.
And she's sticking it right into the camera. She's pulled that little ticket thing that was off the windshield and stuck it right in. All right, lady. Oh, yeah, we're going to listen to you. Yeah, you just locked your dog in a hot car. 130 degrees it was in that vehicle. That dog could have died. And now we're on the street where we're legally allowed to record. And you're going to say, get that camera off me. Yeah, we're going to listen to you, lady. Yeah, right.
Why don't you talk to us? Why don't you talk to us about the dog being in the car?
Talk to you. The car was running when we left. We let it run.
It was 130 degrees inside the car.
Let's go.
She said, we let it run. We got the car running. Now, an obvious lie because they have it all on camera.
Talk to you. The car was running when we left. We left it run. It was 130.
Obvious lie. When you have cameras in there filming all of this, they know. And they, it was very easy to tell it wasn't.
Degrees inside the car.
Let's go.
The Humane Society says the car was not running, but the dog is going to be okay. The dog will be returned to the owner, who has agreed to have it vaccinated and spayed or neutered.
Very important. If you're a dog owner, number one, always get your vaccinations and do the checkups, all right? It's part of being a responsible pet owner. Number two, spay or neuter should just be a default. They automatically do that at pretty much every shelter in the United States. If you have a shelter, and that's just basically standard protocol. You get a dog in or a cat in, you spay or neuter to make sure you control the pet population. Bob Barker would be proud.
So why can't the Humane Society keep it and find it a new home?
We have no actual statutory authority to remove the animals in a situation of a warrant. The law enforcement has the authority to remove the animals.
Okay, they'd have no authority. I get it. There are humane officers out there that can take dogs away. And I just want to mention that's how I got my dog. In fact, my dog was someone that was taken from a property when I was living in Ohio. The story of the dog that I still have right now is one that I love very greatly. The dog was chained up. I own a pit bull. Yeah, those really scary, vicious, mean animals that I've had all but great experiences with. And have no problems, and has been a great family dog, and probably the best dog I've ever owned. So this dog, we don't know exactly. When I talked to the humane officer, I don't know exactly the origins, but was tied up to a tree outside in the heat. The chain that this dog was tied up to weighed more than the dog itself. A healthy weight for this pit bull in particular that I have. His name's Gotti, and he's doing fine right now, by the way. Would be around 50 pounds, 55, if he's chunky. I've got him up to 60 before. He likes to eat. I get it. When they got him, he was closer to 20 or 25 pounds. His ears were so mutilated that they had to cut him off. They couldn't save him because they were, you know, maggots and just chewed up. Terrible. He had problems with his throat, which would indicate that was either a bait dog or they tried to fight him. Had to do a surgery on his throat. They didn't know if he was going to survive. They had to nurse him back to health. It took him 2 years to rehabilitate this dog. Let me put it back. It didn't take 2 years to rehabilitate. That's how long the dog was at the shelter before I adopted him. It was a no-kill shelter. They thought that this dog was going to live at the shelter the rest of his life because no one would give him a chance. And then I got to know the dog, and I absolutely loved him. And guess what? Still have him, still love him. My parents are watching them until we move into a house. Why? Because when you rent, people discriminate. They don't like you having pit bulls. And I found out very quickly when I was looking at homes around the area, there's still a lot of communities that won't let you have pit bulls in the city, which automatically disqualified me from living in those communities. I didn't feel welcome there because I wasn't going to give up my dog to buy a house there. So I was a little bit upset about that because it eliminated some places we really wanted to live. And then it helped me realize the places I'd be welcomed with my dog. And I am someone that is a responsible pet owner, and I can't wait to be reunited with my pet. I'm so glad my parents are watching them, and I get updates every day, and we do FaceTime on the iPad, and the grandparents get to see their grandkid, and I get to see my dog. And it's going to be a great day to be reunited. Which leads me to this other story of Lena Dunham. Lena Dunham, I do not understand how someone could adopt a dog, fall in love with the dog, have this dog and this animal be a part of your family, and then 4 years later say, I want to return it. Any pet owner right now listening, how hard would it be for you to come to the decision, I need to return my dog because I just don't think it's a fit. She adopted this dog in January of 2013. And just now, on June 21st, disclosed that the dog needed to go back. Seriously, if you're a pet owner, what would force you to give your dog up? especially since it's been part of your family for years. 800-925-1120 or 314-436-7900. I'm not a fan of Lena Dunham. I think she's pretty disgusting human being, just to be quite frank. She's so into expressing herself sexually, it's disgusting to me, like the things that she does. And I use that term pretty conservatively, and I don't use that for a lot of people, but I would use it for her. And I think she tries to push the envelope, and I think she feels like she's asked to do it as an actress or an artist or whatever. But it just, everything she does to me is like so gross. So here's the story for her. Back in 2013, she adopted a dog and recently said, well, I think the dog suffered a terrible abuse as a pup. I want to return it. So she abandons ship and returns this thing. Now, the person that she got the dog from is what is called the Bark Center, B-A-R-C, Bark Center, former animal shelter in Brooklyn, I believe. Robert Vasquez knew this animal because it was a pretty high-profile animal at the time. When a celebrity comes in and adopts an animal, people take notice. This is what the person said. When she adopted the dog from us, it was crazy. I have pictures of the dog loving on Lena and her mom, which is weird. If the dog was abused, like she's claiming, wouldn't be doing these things. Then he went on to say, when the dog was here at Bark, where he lived with us for just under a month because he was adopted, he was mild-mannered and very well-behaved. There was no signs of bad temperament or any kinds of aggression. Now, she's getting the criticism I think she deserves, and she's accused of lying about the dog's past, creating a false background and a false profile of this dog, and using it as a way to, I guess, basically give up your dog rental or your dog parental right type of deal. When you adopt a dog, let me just put it this way. If you're going to adopt an animal and you're saying, like, at least I can fall back on just surrendering it if I don't want it, you are not a good animal owner. In fact, you probably shouldn't have an animal. If you are going to get a pet for your kid, like Easter, I'm going to get my kid a rabbit. And then I'll just let it loose when we're sick of taking care of it. You're not a responsible pet owner. Just don't do that. It's not worth it if you're not going to take care of this animal. Same thing with a cat. Now, you know, there's enough stray cats. If I don't, I'll give it a shot, but I'm just going to let her loose. If you're going to abandon animals, I think that a lot of crimes can be committed. And if you also think you can put an animal in a 130-degree car while you go shopping because it's too inconvenient for you to take care of this pet or put proper ways to, board it up or put it in a crate or whatever reason, you don't. If you're just going to go out and about and you can't keep this dog comfortable, in fact, you can probably kill the dog depending on how long you're going to be out, don't have a pet then. If you can't be a responsible owner, just don't have a pet. I was looking at some of the states that protect dogs and cars. Missouri's not one of them, but Illinois is. Unless the website I'm looking at is out of date, and I'm getting this from like a pet blog. And I've always wondered if anyone out there listening has actually broken the window of a car to get a dog out. I want to know how that turned out. So if you have, give me a call. I'm just more curious than anything else. I always thought it'd be fun to break a window to free a dog, but then immediately after you'd be like, what do I do now? Do I take the dog? What do I do with the dog? makes you wonder. All right, a couple of other things I want to get to. The mysterious helicopter. Whoa, what a crazy story that was here in St. Louis. And Governor Greitens selling his home. If you're looking for a new one, hey, maybe you can just move into the former governor's house out here. That's coming up, KMOX.
Get the latest from the Cardinals from manager Mike Matheny on the Safeway GM Country Mike Matheny Show. Sundays at 10:15, exclusively on your home for best Cardinals coverage, KMOX.
And welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and you can reach me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. There's a survey that came out that said Americans spend 4 years of their lives escaping reality. For some reason, that number seems low. When I hear 4 years escaping reality, I think about the amount of years they say is shaved off your life for sleeping. Depending on if you do 7 hours or 8 hours a night or whatever it may be, you're going to be sleeping a big portion of your life. So possibly a third of your life is going to be in bed, right? Enjoying La La Land. So however long you live, but for saying that Americans spend 4 years of their lives to escape reality. This is from the New York Post. The from 22 minutes, the average time the person spends daydreaming each day. How often do you have 22 minutes a day? What do you do where you can daydream for 22 minutes a day? Like, sometimes I'll catch myself. Like, I'll be in the morning, I'll be taking a shower, and I'll start thinking about something, and then I'll realize I'm just standing there. Like, I snap myself out of it. But it's not like I'm standing there for 20 minutes trying to figure things out. Who just sits there looking into the space? No one's got time for that. I mean, I try to occupy my time either reading or watching videos on YouTube, you know, the way sophisticated people like myself, you wouldn't understand. But here's where 2,000 surveyed people in the United States said that they spend their time. All right. 12 hours, 56 minutes of escaping our reality each week comes from reading books. Oh, I guess that doesn't count. When they said daydreaming, I thought eyes glaze over, you're not doing anything. So you have reading books, watching movies, or dreaming of vacations. So I guess that's included too. I don't really dream of vacations like, oh boy, I wish I wasn't here. That's a pretty lousy way to drive yourself nuts, to try to prove to yourself that you're unhappy. It's like you're trying to convince yourself you're not happy. Other popular forms of escape tend to be highly among those surveyed, involving exploring new places. So I guess if you're out there playing Pokemon Go or whatever it's called, Pokego, Pokeyo-Yo, Pokemon-Yo, I don't know. Listening to music. Now, I don't know if you can listen and appreciate music in the car. It's not like you're daydreaming, right? And playing video games, which is a great way to escape. I haven't played video games in a long time. I'm not really someone I consider myself a gamer, but I always think to myself, you know, it would be fun to play video games. And then what happens, generally speaking, I play for like a half hour and I get bored. Like, no thanks, I'm done. The most common daydream Americans confess to is the thought of winning the lottery. Well, who hasn't thought about hitting Easy Street, followed by going on vacation or traveling somewhere exotic? No thanks. I don't think I will ever find myself leaving the United States. If I'm going to travel, I'm going to travel these great, great United States. And I just don't see the need for me to say, you know where I want to go to? Oh, I heard Afghanistan's beautiful this time of year. Never once have I thought something like that. Here's the top 10 daydreams. Okay, number one, winning the lottery, going on vacation, traveling somewhere exotic. Four, I'm just going to say hanky-panky. I guess people fantasize about that. Going to the beach, doing something adventurous, what would be adventurous, like skydiving? Adventurous for me is like trying a new restaurant that I'm going to roll the dice. Speaking my mind. Now, I have thought about this a lot. Like, oh, have you ever replayed conversations in your head? Like, oh, I wish I would have said it this way. Oh, I wish I would have said this. Or in your mind, you play out something that never happened, but you somehow become the hero of that fantasy. Yeah, I can see that. Meeting the one. I'm so glad I'm not single. Oh, man, what a miserable time when I was single, always looking for someone, always feeling like I have to impress women, always like trying to look for the next one. Yeah, that was very stressful. Life has been just so much better ever since I got married, where I don't have to worry about what other people think, especially women. Oh, life has been great. Quitting my job. Wow. Have I ever fantasized about quitting? I guess I fantasized like that moment where you walk in and quit. Wouldn't that feel great? Errands that you need to do. Yeah, that's a lot too. The math totals of American escapism apparently runs up to about 13 hours. This per week? 13 hours a week? Wow. That's an awful lot of time to start fantasizing. You know, all the productive things you can do with that 13 hours a week. There's so many better things you can do. Go take your dog for a walk. Play with your kids. Read a book. Try to study something. Maybe you can take up a hobby. What did Jim White say? Never trust someone that has more than one hobby. Something like that. All right, coming up in the next hour, the helicopter. What about that crazy helicopter story? I'm sure you'll hear about it in the news, but I do want to talk about that in Swansea, and it's raising some pretty big questions of what's going on there. And on top of that, hundreds of New York cops sounding off. Up next, Camo X.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.